This week's episode of The Unwind is brought to you by Green Man Gaming. You can get 20% off the latest games by going to thecommentist.com and clicking on the banner. What up, nerds?
You know, oh, you fucker.
What up, nerds? Welcome to episode 65 of The Unwind, a weekly show where we talk about tech, games, gadgets, and geek culture. My name is Rob Steller.
I'm Sean Thomas.
And I'm Josiah Hills.
So, this week, there's a little thing called CES that just happened.
I want to go, but Josiah tells me no.
You can go. I'm just not going with you. I mean, I hear it's a miserable time. Why would you want to go?
There's just a lot
of cool stuff.
To be honest,
I haven't been to Vegas yet.
I think the people who don't like it are the tech journalists who are jaded because they've been going for years. I think going once or twice would be fun as hell. But for those who don't know what it is,
fun as hell.
Yeah,
hell is
awesome.
Pretty fun.
Yeah.
Hell is crazy.
Yay, hell.
I don't know if you've been down there, but it's
this is awesome.
Man, Satan's a pretty cool guy.
Like
he's got a bad
me
rap.
With a pitchfork, and it's hot as fuck. It's awesome.
But yeah, so CES is the Consumer Electronics Show. It's a pretty big deal for tech. Well, it's a big deal for, I guess, general tech. It's basically where all the companies outside of Google, Microsoft, and Apple show off all their new products, basically what's going to be the new wave of consumer electronics in terms of, you know, media players, appliances, cars, random things.
Gotta
like
get
wearables.
Those new toasters, man.
Seriously, it's really like appliances are a big deal there. So it's basically just a huge tech fest. One thing that has changed though, since Apple, Google, Microsoft do all their big events by themselves, it's not necessarily the biggest announcements of the year, but they're still huge for all these companies. And this is where a lot of smaller companies that are trying to grow show off what they have. Like Huawei had a huge footprint last year or 2 years ago, and they came out of nowhere. But anyway, it's a pretty big deal. CES is already over now, but we thought we would start talking about it. So the first big one I want to go over is cars. Cars is a big deal at the show. Tech is clearly integrating into cars. It has been for years, but now we're getting to the point where it's integrating in multiple ways. Mm-hmm. So on one end, there's the whole into your HUD on your car. You know, there's Apple CarPlay, there's Android Auto, there's also, you know, Ford has Sync, and they have a lot of other systems. So there's a whole innovation in terms of the center console. Then there's also all the electronics and tech that go into electric cars. So there's like those two huge movements that are both a lot of it being shown off.
Yeah, not to
CES.
Mention, you know, the move towards autonomous cars as well.
Yeah,
so this
yeah.
this is actually, you're right, tech has been a big part of cars, obviously, but it's a fairly new thing. Maybe the last 2 or 3 years that cars and car companies have started showing up specifically at CES because, you know, they already have their own auto shows and
which
that sort of thing.
Also took place this week.
Yeah.
Or last week, yeah.
Yeah,
Detroit.
Right after.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Kind of slightly overlapping, yeah.
And I think one difference now is, I mean, technology was always in cars, but now it's gotten to such a point where it's clearly overlapping with the tech sector. I mean, when you're having apps in your car and things like that, that changes it from just, you know, a feature of your car to a larger ecosystem kind
of
idea.
Yeah, and things that you don't even, you know, I think I heard an engineer from Ford say that he was quoted as saying something like, there's over 150,000 lines of code in just a Ford F-150.
That's crazy.
Right? And it's not like a souped-up tech car. You know, it's not like a Tesla or anything like that. So it's not self-driving or anything. It's just got an entertainment system, and that's it, right? So, it's pretty interesting. And then the other thing that I've noticed is kind of, you know, over the last decade, we had this movement called consumerization of IT, right? So that's the idea of, you know, high-level managers or CEOs, C-level managers, bringing in their iPhone and their Android devices and basically telling the IT guys, make it work, right?
Yeah.
I don't want to carry around a BlackBerry anymore. I got this new device. Make it work. And so IT has had to kind of chase after consumer tech. And I feel like that's kind of what's happening with things like Android Auto and CarPlay. Like these, after, you know, 4 or 5 years of people being able to just do the aux in or Bluetooth audio from their smartphone into their dashboard, these Which car
I just,
companies
I just got
these car companies have like figured out that they're really shitty at making good entertainment consoles, and they're like, why are we spending this much money? You know, not all of them, some are still trying to act like they have some coding prowess, but a lot of them are finally relenting and saying, this is really stupid for us to spend a lot of time and energy when people really just want to take the interface from their phone.
Yeah, the funny thing with that too is it's almost like skinning of Android phones. So many car companies don't want to wrest control of their infotainment system. I would assume part of it is they want to have their own system implemented the way they have it, but I can't think of maybe BMW's iDrive. I can't think of a single system, and maybe Tesla's system, that people are like, oh, I would buy a car for this system. I feel like every system is pretty universally terrible. Like, I remember Ford Sync, they had a big push for that. I remember, Josiah, you had it.
Yeah,
I
had a relatively low-level one because it was, you know, I didn't have, like, a color LCD in there or anything like that. But I, through rental cars or loaners from when I had to take my car in and stuff, I have used, like, the bigger, the more advanced package, and it's okay. I mean, it would be really good if nobody had a smartphone.
Yeah, exactly. And that, now that we have that baseline, I mean, you think of other, even just basically GPS, that's probably the most important part of those systems. When you're using it and you want to use Google Maps versus whatever this system is, you just can't until now, or, you know, some people prefer Apple Maps. They don't know what they're thinking, talking about. But you have systems like that. And then you also move into how much audio is important. Like you said, I mean, they have Bluetooth audio and aux ports, but you want to play Spotify. You want to play Apple Music or Google Play Music or Groove.
And even with... So,
yeah, I got Groove in there.
Nice. Thank you. Nice. Appreciate it.
Nobody knows what that is, but
it's a good service, man.
But, you know, I still have this problem even with my 2015 Honda Fit, right? So they have their own proprietary system. And when I plug in my phone, it sometimes, like, it starts, I can't figure out the logic behind it because sometimes it autoplays iTunes, the last song I played in iTunes. And other times it'll autoplay whatever was the last audio app that I had opened. And sometimes, basically the point is, I can't figure out what it decides to do whenever I turn on my car. And so it's really
bizarre.
Give it
on permanent shuffle. It just always randomly plays whatever that
is. And in that case, I'd just rather... Yeah, that's the same. That's a good point. So sometimes when it does actually play iTunes, it starts from all my music because it always plays the same few songs in alphabetical order, right?
Yeah.
So that sometimes happens, but other times it actually plays the last playlist that I was playing in iTunes. So it's totally bizarre to me, and it just kind of doesn't work. You know, in any way that I'd expect it to. So I'd rather just be able to just talk to my phone and say, hey, play this playlist, you know.
Well, I'm excited to see more and more cars integrate both CarPlay and auto. And it's also nice to see that it seems like most manufacturers are doing both. So you don't have to have this split of, because I even remember early on, I remember BMW pushing that you could plug your iPhone in, and they actually had like connectors for your iPhone. But then it's like, well, if you have an Android phone, what do you do?
Yeah,
so it's nice that a lot of manufacturers are including both of these.
Did, I think this was like last year or the year before, and I want to say it was like BMW, one of the higher end cars. But they were working on this. I don't know if it was just a concept or they actually had this going, but they had some HUD elements built into the windshield.
Yeah, I think that was Mercedes.
Mercedes.
But yeah.
I think iDrive does some of that stuff too with BMW.
Did they show anything like this year?
So that new car you're talking about, the FF01, the future Faraday car. So this kind of concept car. It does have some HUD stuff. That's one of the things is they're supposed to have like this on-screen display of like real-time statistics of your car, that sort of thing, your real-time gas mileage, et cetera.
Remember seeing a motorcycle helmet that had a lot of that built in. Oh, so it showed like your speed. I think it did navigation too, which is pretty clever, especially for a motorcycle.
It's kind of like a HoloLens in the cycle.
Oh, man, helmet. I hope you can theme it, put like a MechWarrior theme on it.
Yeah,
that, overheating.
So when you see me... put the racing line on there. Yeah. You know, like, okay.
You see me walking around all the time with a motorcycle helmet. Like, what the hell is he doing?
Oh, he's really into Hotline Miami. Yeah, no, I think that's really cool. I mean, well, since you just went into it, I think probably the biggest announcement at CES in terms of cars was Faraday Future's car, which is, like you said, the FF01, which, yeah, FF, and then zero is spelled out, and then there's the one. I wonder if they'll do exclamation point too. 01 exclamation point.
Exclamation point spelled out.
Spelled out. Yeah.
So, it's a very interesting car, and I'll be honest, I'm definitely not an expert on this, but basically this company has been under wraps for a while. People have been doing a bunch of interviews with them lately, and they kind of see themselves as a Tesla competitor. And they, oddly enough, they have a huge investment from essentially Chinese Netflix, which seems like a weird, I don't know why somebody who's making a Netflix would want to invest in a car company.
It's just, it's a toy for that guy, right? I mean, this guy's a billionaire and he's like, I would like a one-seater, super fancy, super fast electric car.
Yeah. Well, maybe
that's what it is. It's a toy for him.
Think of the crossover potential. Get Netflix, Netflix now and get a free car, or get a free car and get a month worth of Netflix.
Yeah, it probably works the other way.
Their car they showed off. It looks ridiculous in terms of it looks like a concept car. It's this absurd, just insane. What is that hyper futuristic look? You know, anytime anyone who's seen a hypercar, a concept car, knows what this is.
Can I just say real quick that during the Detroit Auto Show, Acura showed off their precision concept, which is pretty much exactly the car that I could design if I could ever design one.
It's like a Flintstones car because it doesn't actually work. So you just gotta use your feet. So you can buy one of those. You can get
honestly, I hate concept cars because they make me want them so bad, and I'll never get to touch them.
To me, concept cars are always the ones that look super cool when you see them there, and in like 2 years, like, wow, that looks really old. It feels like retrofuturistic.
That's a good point, because they take all the quote unquote future trends and they max them out, right?
Yes.
But then the cars that actually come out take hints and accents of all those future trends, and so they're kind of like bringing you into the future. But these concept cars are
the power
to the max
glove of
whatever
cars.
Somebody imagines is the future, and then they look really old after a couple of years.
I mean, I'm pretty sure
let
the
me have my 2 years.
Rob will be the coolest guy in the world
for 2 years.
It's like what was that shirt that changed color? The hyper color shirts or whatever.
Oh, I don't even.
Yeah,
know.
You guys are too
no,
young
no,
for
no,
that.
No. You used to put your hand. I think you respond to heat, right?
Yeah, yeah,
you
yeah.
Put your hand
people
on it.
Wanted those.
That sounds
like,
awesome.
Yeah, until like you wear them and then you realize if you start sweating, it just like
Sure. People thought they were the coolest shit ever.
You see somebody you have a crush on, all of a sudden your whole shirt starts turning all these dark colors. No.
Yeah.
So they showed off their car. But one thing, my understanding from this is the car isn't the big deal behind this company. The car, it's not in, like Tesla, where their Model X is their important thing. Although, you know, many argue that Tesla's big thing are the batteries. But it's more the technology that makes up that car. And I don't know, Josiah, you can talk about it too. My understanding is that this company is almost making a modular car, in that the pieces that they're building are scalable. And one important thing is they can scale the batteries, which is a pretty big part, for obvious reasons, of electric cars. And they are making it scalable so people can essentially put together an electric car. Maybe not at home. Like, it's not that easy, but it makes for a lot of different configurations that...
Yeah, I don't know if that's their business model, but it kind of reminds me of the Lotus, right? Like, and that's actually, you know, the very first Teslas were basically the Lotus kits, right? So maybe it's going to be something like a millionaire or billionaire's kit car. Who knows? But some of the other modularity of it is on the app side, on the software side. So, you know, we've talked about how, like, Tesla, you can literally download updates to your cars that cost $2,000-$3,000, and then the next thing you know, your car could go from 0 to 60 in whatever,
it's
6 seconds,
ridiculous.
And now it goes 0 to 60 in 4.5 seconds, right? Because you paid $3,000 and downloaded firmware. So it's a similar concept where they showed off, like, you basically would have an app on your phone, and you could do some tweaking of the torque and the tuning of the car, the motor. Because it's all electric, right? Because it's an electric car, and you don't have to, like, actually go in and shave down your hands or anything like that. So you could kind of customize it and say, okay, I'm going to be driving in this area, and boom, slap it in the dash, slap your phone in the dashboard, and it just takes up all those settings, and you're ready to drive in that area. And then you go to a new place to take your toy car and a new track, and it has a different set of settings. So,
which is pretty cool. I mean, I even like the super basic thing that some cars they've had for years now, where you can even have just basic settings where you have profiles. Your seat will adjust and your mirrors will adjust. It's like a simple thing. It's nice to have.
Exactly. And that's a good point, because that's a really nice thing, but it's very clunky, right? Because you have to use hard switches or something like that. Yeah. Or you have to remember that you have to tap it three times in a certain way, and then it sets setting three, and then you have to remember, oh, I'm setting two and my wife is setting one or whatever. And it's just not intuitive, where like if you digitize that and just make it an app, you can say, press this button for Josiah's settings, press this button for Sean's settings, and you can have infinite number of settings because you don't have to like alter the switch position or tap a button up to three times, and it has to be hardwired in there. It's just all digital.
All my buttons, I engraved with a knife my name on the setting of Mom, Sean, Josiah. We all had the same car.
And then you put like duct tape over and don't move. Yeah. So it's you know, would it make me, who knows what they're going to ask for this car, right? Because I mean, I think they are taking that Tesla model as well, in that they're going for a really high end premium car, and then maybe down the road they're gonna go into more of a consumer model.
It'll be good to see competition in that. Granted, none of us will have that car unless Josiah wins the lottery tonight, but like none of us will ever get this car, so it doesn't really affect me.
I'm not getting that car when I win the lottery tonight.
Interesting.
Well, there are a couple of things. First of all, yes, you're right in that we might not get this car, but a lot of it also has to do with how this trickles down later, whether or not they sell their tech. Like one simple thing, people talk about the Prius is probably the most well-known hybrid vehicle. And the reason why it was important to Toyota wasn't just because they could sell Priuses, but because they use the Prius technology in every other one of their cars. Yeah. They can just make a hybrid version.
Right. Yeah.
So also with what Tesla's doing, I mean, their big thing is batteries as well, but seeing where this can go. Now, where their business model, there's still a lot of just they haven't really gone out and stated what they are doing. I mean, this reveal was probably the biggest thing, but apparently they've been talking about maybe a subscription model where you subscribe and you could get a different vehicle based on whatever you
want.
That
makes a lot of sense, again, because of that app, right? You keep your settings, so you can hop into any one of these cars. It's almost like a zip car type thing, or and you just have your subscription, right? So you go to the track where you can really just take this thing and just blow it up. You slap your phone in the dashboard. It's got all your tunings and settings, and you go for it, man.
Wait, so are we saying this is basically a transformer?
Yeah.
Because if this is a freaking transformer, I'm going to order an 18-wheeler just in case Optimus Prime comes out.
Yeah, you didn't see the metal nuts on the back end.
Oh, God, no. No. Wow.
Robot nuts.
Wow.
But it's really cool to see. There's still a lot to hear about this company. We don't know what they're going to do.
Yeah,
it could all be
vaporware. Who knows?
Yeah. Well, honestly, but this was clearly a concept car. It was not. Yeah, you're not going to see this on the road. They're not at the point that Tesla is, but they have a lot of money behind them. So we're going to see. Apparently they're putting together a $1 billion factory in Nevada. We'll see what
making cars is very expensive.
Yeah.
So, you know, we'll see how much patience their backers have, because this stuff can go south very quickly when your overhead costs are so high. So
I'd pay a couple grand for Optimus Prime. 500 up front.
I just want my precision. I just want that car.
And speaking of Optimus Prime, let's jump and go to drones. So that I think that was another trending topic at CES.
Yeah, I think
a lot of drones.
Yeah,
trending in the world too.
A lot of these, and this is a little off topic, but a lot of these that we're covering, I think, have been trends for 2-3 years now. Like
cars have been out for a little while now.
Yeah, yeah. but cars like wearables, drones, like these are all things that have been kind of like, this is what's big this year.
Yeah, they're just evolving in a lot of different ways. I mean, drones kind of exploded, and it's also, I still find it funny that they call it drones when most of them are quadricopters, and drones just sounds like a funny way.
Yeah, well, that's the thing though, because you're right. Like the consumer unmanned vehicles that we've been using have mostly been quadricopters over the last few years. Mm-hmm. But some of the big companies like, what is it, DJI?
Yeah.
They had this winged drone. And so,
oh, I didn't see that.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. And so you can kind of just toss it up, not quite just like randomly, but you can fling it almost like a frisbee, and it will catch and start flying, and then from there it'll go, and it has basically twice the airtime, a little more than twice the airtime. So a lot of quadricopters are about 20 minutes, but yeah, this has about 45 minutes because it's catching air, you know, with the airfoil frame of it.
Can I just say that is a crazy part? So I actually bought a drone for my brother, and I was looking up. I got a cheaper one. I wasn't going to invest that much. And flight time for a normal battery is about 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Jeez. And then I look up, like, okay, this is probably because this is a crappy one. Yeah, even the DJI ones on the high end, you're looking at 20, 25 minutes.
Try it?
That's why you... What?
You try the drone?
So I didn't. So my brother lives in a different state. He tried it. So here's the funny thing about it. So he took it out of the box and he just wanted to play with it. So he immediately tried it. He didn't know in order to start it up, there's a whole sequence of things you have to do. So by the time he read the manual and figured it out, the battery died. So he actually didn't fly it. I sent him more batteries, but I don't know if he's had the time to try them yet. But I think he said he was flying it with his neighbor. A bunch of times, and he said it was fun. I haven't seen any videos from it because it does have a camera on it. Yeah.
Nice.
But anyway, drones seem super cool. But yeah, the battery life is ridiculous. Yeah. I mean, and now so many professionals are using them, especially media companies to film video. But yeah, they just have to have all these extra battery packs because 25 minutes.
And the, you know, this one with a wing, I think it could go 50 miles per hour.
Wow, so that's really
pretty
fast.
Cool stuff. Like you can get someplace very quickly. Scope it out, you know.
I hope
I'm
it has
assuming
better range.
You're doing something positive or just hobbyist, but and then they had that human size.
I forgot what the company that put out with it, but yeah, so it's basically a quadricopter that could fit humans. It was like a giant drone, or what you see as drones.
Does it have a 10-minute
battery? Was it? It just goes up and down.
That's it.
I don't actually know how long.
I think they
it
talked about
on.
It in range. I think it had like a 20-mile range or something like that.
I can almost get to my parents' house from here. That is the new mode of transportation for
and,
me.
And so it's you don't pilot it. It's autonomous. You don't pilot it. It's just you plug in a destination and you say go.
I can get to work.
What do you think people would do if you bring a quadricopter to work?
Like, I don't know. If I buy one, Crack will provide me a parking space somewhere?
Yeah, the parking space is huge. You just got to get there early enough.
What would you do at work if you drove in and there was like car, quadricopter?
Where did I park my vehicle? I'm not sure. You could just tell it to come to you.
Yeah, come to you. I wouldn't even have to worry. Oh, it'd be so amazing.
But yeah, that one looked pretty cool. Did you guys see any other drones that piqued your interest?
No, nothing terribly out of the ordinary besides those two. So I think there was another company that had, you know, a winged drone as well. So that might be a trend. Not sure if it's going to be more of a... I don't know how suitable it is for, you know, some of the aerial footage because it you know, it's probably going faster on average. It can't hover in a central location, that sort of thing. But obviously for flybys or for longer distance flights or just hobbyists who want to have more time of flight, it could be pretty cool.
I mean, I will say, I mean, drones have definitely changed video in that... You know, not too long ago, you had to buy a helicopter setup in order to get a lot of flyby shots from the air.
It was a lot of stock footage, actually.
Yeah.
So all these helicopter pilots whose job it was to shoot stock footage, they're just pissed off. They're like, God damn it.
One union.
I make payments on this helicopter still.
I played a soccer game where this guy from ESPN was like testing out like how to film using a drone.
Yeah.
So he was filming our Sunday league game.
Nice.
So all you hear is like, and all of a sudden you like look up and there's just a drone flying above the game.
I would definitely attach Nerf guns to it and all of a sudden start shooting you down or have Roman candles on there.
Yeah.
That's pretty awesome. But it definitely has changed how video is shot. I mean, I see this all the time now. You can kind of tell when it's shot from a drone, especially nowadays. They have better stabilization techniques. Mm-hmm. There's just smooth video that goes from the ground up, and you can just tell they're drones.
And I guess the alternative to stock footage or hiring a helicopter crew before drones were really was CGI as well, right? Like,
or just have a really tall person run real
fast.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, but the thing is, and all of those are high levels of investment. I mean, not a regular person can't invest in CGI, but you really, I mean, even if you're spending $1,000 on a drone, if you're a filmmaker, that's a huge investment.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like buying another camera. So it kind of democratizes it, and it makes it, it's also more portable. I mean, a helicopter setup, I mean, you can't really do that. You have to set aside time with this.
Yeah.
I mean, you can just film it whenever you want to. So drones are pretty cool. I kind of want one, but it's also one of those things, I guess. I don't know if I'm going to drop $1,000 on it, but I at least want to try it.
I think that's Rob's answer.
Rent quadcopter.
Yeah, I think.
I mean, clearly you see my spending habits. Like, come on.
I think they're not quite there. Obviously, for me, right? Because I don't do first gen stuff. So, not to say that this is first gen, but it still kind of feels like it's first gen, right? Because because the difference, like you were pointing out, the difference between high end and like mid range or low end is 10 minute battery life versus 20 minute battery life.
Right.
And it's it's another $600 for another 10 minutes of battery life.
Yeah.
That to me means that it just smacks of early gen. And they just have to figure this stuff out.
Can we promise though, like once prices are reasonable, like a few hundred bucks for a good one, we start our own drone racing league?
Yes.
I've seen videos of that, and that looks so amazing. Awesome.
Especially with like, Josiah would die, but like you have the VR
kits
and stuff, and you're like driving it around.
But let's be honest, the first season of racing is just going to be us crashing into each other because we don't know how to fly.
They're mine won't even get to the track. It'll just be like straight up and then backwards and then into the house.
Oh god. So this is a totally unrelated thing, but Rob and I played Battlefield 3 once because we both got it and we're like, oh, we had never played any Battlefield games, and so you go into the vehicles. Oh my god, that was a shit show. I just see Rob get into the F-16 plane.
I was so excited.
He was like, oh, I got in the plane, because you gotta run to get the plane. He just flies straight and goes right off the ground and blows up. First couple seconds, he just blew up. It was awesome.
I think you piloting the helicopter with like four of us on God. There, and it like lifts off the ground. It looks like we're about to get going, and then it just teeters, completely flips over, and kills all of us.
And we should keep in mind that only Rob and I knew each other. The other two people were random people, noobs. They don't even know how to pilot this shit.
Oh, I love video games.
Great.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on to the break here. Just to remind you, the show is brought to you by Green Man Gaming. You can get 20% off the latest games by going to the Commons' website and clicking on the banner. So this week, I'd like to ask you what your favorite idea, concept, product, thing that you saw that came out of CES this year.
I think for me, we already talked about it. I think it's going to be the human quadricopter. That sounds that's not right. It's not a quadricopter made out of humans. It's a guy just waving his arms around really fast.
It's four guys.
That's gonna be a bind.
It's a
we have to make
Pablo
that.
Song.
No, we're gonna make
it's
a bind.
Put it
Not gonna get very far in that thing.
But it makes a lot of noises. You post me up cooking breakfast. But yeah, so I think that looks really cool. I actually haven't seen it fly. So I'm assuming it actually works. But, I don't know. It just sounds kind of cool. It's almost like a helicopter that anyone can fly, assuming it works.
That sounds terrifying to me.
It does. It is really scary to put your hands in.
Like, at least in
no
cars, you're on the ground.
Yeah.
But if it works, it's really cool because it's a sky cab, right?
Yeah.
It's like I can bypass all this traffic and get exactly where I want to go, and I can sit and read or watch a TV show or whatever while this thing is taking me.
Do you think they have heat in it yet?
No, I mean, it was an open cab. Like, it was just a wireframe.
That's not going to work for me.
Yeah.
And think about all the great evil escapes you could have where you just have a maniacal laugh and then you fly away in your quadricopter. But then you realize you have it set to the same house that you're currently at, and then it comes back down.
It needs to start growing a mustache so that I can start twisting.
And have a British accent because apparently Brits
and a monocle.
Villains.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's good.
Favorite thing?
No.
CES?
Nothing.
Nothing?
Nothing.
I will say overall this CES, every CES has its fair share of crap and decent stuff. This year felt kind of muted. I don't know what came out of it. I think last year may have been 4K or something like that. No, probably not. 4K was up 4 years ago.
Okay, I'll say that. I'm actually interested in the UHD premium certification that they were talking about. So
yeah.
So UHD is ultra HD high def, and it's basically 4K. But it, that UHD premium certification says that it's not just 4K. It has a certain the dynamic range, high dynamic range, and it also has a certain number of viewable colors. Right. So
HD black and white. Well, actually, black and white.
They always say that. I don't know. I'm a little confused because they always say, well, the human eyes can only see whatever.
There's no blue.
But they're saying like we have a Coke can on the table here, and you can't accurately display that red on most monitors.
That's red.
I'm just kidding.
Just kidding.
Rob is slightly colorblind.
It's teal.
He won't admit it.
Rob has monitors in his eyes.
But
I will soon, Sean.
But yeah, so I mean that's interesting. I've heard a lot of people say that's more exciting, that UHD premium categorization, when you see a really high quality 4K monitor that meets all those criteria, it's better than 3D. Like, it's looking outside a window. You know, like, I think there was some hyperbole when the first 1080p screens came out, and people were like, oh, it's amazing. But this stuff apparently it's supposed to be really good. So I guess that's interesting to me also because the pricing is not that high.
Yeah, right? Like, you can some get Changlongs.
Yeah. You know, like, the good stuff is still going to be, you know, a couple thousand, few thousand dollars. But, you know, that means by the time I want to buy one, it's going to be about $500.
Oh, it's also good because 4K is now really affordable.
Yeah.
Like, you can get a 50, 55-inch 4K for, like, $500, $600 now.
Oh, wow.
Like,
yeah, but those aren't the good ones.
No, no, no. What? Like a Sony or something like that?
No, it's not about the brand, Rob. It's just what I just explained. It's the high definition. I mean, it's the high dynamic range. You have to have really high contrast.
I only need two colors
to get the colors to pop and make it feel like a real picture.
So, since you were saying that, do you think, you know, your TV is starting to age? Do you want to invest in a 4K TV anytime soon?
No. So I would just get a really good, 1080p.
Huh.
With because I can get a really, you know, I can get a 60-inch TV, LED, backlighting, and all that stuff. You know, for $300-$400.
Yeah, right? And I should also mention, I mean, yeah, that's ridiculous.
So I'm not going to pay $4,000 for a really good 4K TV, and I'm not going to pay $500 for a really not good, you know,
4K.
But you can say you have a Changhong.
Changhong. I would say, so there's one thing we were looking at earlier, and I remember seeing this when, I don't know, Verge or somebody covered it, but there's this push towards transparent glass that can turn into TV screens.
Yeah.
So they had this, like, I forget who the company was, but they had it built into an edutainment system.
Wasn't it LG?
It might have been LG. So basically they had all the shelving and you could have stuff on the shelves, and it was basically a sheet of glass that was on one of, you know, in front of a couple of the shelves that just like turned dark and then turned into a TV. Which was cool. And I think they had it like moving and shifting and stuff like that. The other big thing of that, which I would like to have, is just glass that just displays in like a smart glass, essentially,
yeah,
that just displays information like weather notifications just around my house. That's actually what I would be most looking forward to, is not necessarily for to have a TV as part of my shelving, but just to have a pane of glass that I can display customized information to.
Yeah.
So this is so funny because on Imgur, somebody literally just posted, he made a mirror that I don't even know. He explained how he built it so people can make it.
Yeah.
And he has a Raspberry Pi powering it.
So the guy that I'm kind of getting mentored from to do programming, his friend is building that. I don't think it's that one, but he's building he's using that to build his, because I think he open sourced a lot of what he's doing. So I kind of want to do that now.
He made it seem like it wasn't terribly difficult, but
I'm terrible at these things.
Yeah, so. Yeah, I mean, it's still, I'm sure it's, you know, it's still not super easy, but I don't know. It looks kind of cool that I really like. I don't know what they're going to use it for in SA. I could see window shopping actually, but transparent.
Yeah.
I even think, you know, if you could do it with wearables, you think about having a analog watch face or like a real watch face, and then have,
what was that watch we saw?
Yeah, there was some watch that did that, right?
A year and a half ago. It was a mechanical watch, but the top glass pane basically could show notifications. I don't know what happened to that.
Well, I mean, this was, you know, back when it was really popular. It's still kind of a thing, but for a while it was super popular for people just to make random, concept images for the iPhone.
Yeah.
And there
yeah.
was one where, like, I forget which number it's supposed to be, the 4 or the 4S or whatever. And it was basically just a clear piece of glass. You know, obviously, they weren't going to make that, but...
Or will they?
There's this video from Corning called A Day of Glass, yes, and they have Day
yeah,
of Glass,
yeah.
too.
Yeah, I remember
and
that.
And it's the same concept. You know, these clear glass tablets, yep. and then you swipe up, and it's on the clear glass yep. wall, and that's just a
Your
screen.
Your windows can fade yeah. out or fade so that the sun gets blocked and things like that. Yeah. yeah, there's a lot of cool stuff.
Unfortunately, on day two, the rock people invaded, and they destroyed all the glass.
Like that whole idea, though, like I like that the transparent look and stuff like that, but just to have things like around the house that just can display data that's not necessarily a TV screen,
yeah,
but just a regular piece of glass, or I guess, you know.
I feel like that quotes, future, but... that idea has been around for so long. It's something like you think about Kinect and the Minority Report thing. They yeah, kind of did that yeah. same idea.
Well,
like
I mean,
you
it's
have...
even like in Star Wars, the battle maps that they yeah, have, they're all yeah. just glass panels.
yeah.
In 77, that was dropped.
Yeah. And just a quick thing to branch off that, I think it was also cool. I'm pretty sure it's still LG. They showed off their foldable or rollable LCD yeah. screens, which they've had around for a while, but apparently now they actually have prototypes that you can actually touch, which means they're closer to actually having a consumer version of it, I believe. Mm-hmm. I don't know how far away. I don't even know exactly what they're going to use it with. Maybe I could see some kind of band or something like that they could use that for, or, you know, have around phone.
Yeah, I don't know if it's ever, if you really need, like, something that you can literally roll up and take with you, maybe. I don't know. But, you know, if, it would be nice just to have the curved screens, which they do have those in devices. You know, you've got the Microsoft Band and,
yeah,
and a couple phones
true.
That have had curved screens, and obviously TVs now have it. So I don't know if I'd ever want a screen that I completely roll up or fold, but just the fact that I can have more interesting shapes and form factors in ordinary electronics is cool.
I've always felt like, you know, as we moved over to Kindles and things like that, one thing we lost from newspapers was fly killing technology. Smack, and now we have it back. We can use our nice. $1 billion LCD.
Yeah, that's a good point. Good point, Sean.
Fly genocide. Points. Watch out, flies.
Points for Sean. Points for Sean.
Okay, then we'll just move into our last section where we want to talk about wearables. So we're kind of getting into some element of this. There were a bunch of announcements. Probably the biggest one has to do with Fitbit. So it's actually funny. They started off by talking about how much money they're making, and they're actually doing really well, which sounds silly. Like, yeah, I mean, they're selling like crazy, but people... like them pointing out that they're making money is important because they're selling a lot of these devices and it's all fitness trackers. They didn't, well, now they have kind of, but for a while they didn't go the smartwatch route. They stuck with fitness trackers and it's really blown up. People love these things. I have so many friends who use the social aspect of it and they want to get more steps than the other person.
There he goes bragging about how many friends he has.
And how many steps he gets.
I have so many friend.
It's just
it's sad. But, it's sad how many few steps I like. This is why I don't do social things with my fitness stuff, because it's depressing.
But it's funny though. I've definitely heard of people that join groups and then they just want to get more steps. They're not athletes by any means.
Now I gotta get a treadmill desk, Josiah.
Standing desk is not
go ahead. I'm not stopping you.
But the big thing they announced was the Fitbit Blaze, which is more like a smartwatch, which is kind of interesting that they're getting into it, but it's still focused on a lot of what they do, the fitness tracking features. I think it has, let's see, it has ridiculous battery life, so they're promising 5 days of battery life, but it doesn't have GPS on it, which is kind of weird, because you would think,
that's
especially
how they get that 5 day battery.
Yeah, I guess, but it just feels like, you know, when you're running in places, like I feel like that's where it's useful. But they really want to build into this, and Josiah, we were talking about this earlier. Right now, the main thing that's happening in wearables is actually fitness trackers kind of moving, not completely away, but less focus on the whole smartwatch thing, only because smartwatches, I feel like, are kind of all over the place, but now there's a lot of fitness trackers coming out.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's almost like a retro. So I think in 2013, there was tons and tons of fitness trackers, and it just blew up, and then... and, you know, like no-name Chinese companies coming into the game with fitness trackers. And then last year, CES was all about the smartwatches. Apple doesn't go to that show, as you mentioned before, but you know, it was looming over the show. And then this year, after the Apple Watch dropped and many Android watches are in their second generation, nobody really wanted to talk about them because they're not sure that they're making money off of those things. So they went back and doubled down on the wearable stuff that was fitness. You had some new companies come into the game, but they came into it because they bought other companies, namely Under Armour and Fossil. So they have some wearables that, you know, it's minor focus on notifications, those types of things like caller ID, et cetera, but a big focus on full-time heart rate monitoring, either standalone GPS or linked GPS. They're claiming, you know, things like it can monitor things beyond steps. So I think that Fitbit Blaze smart watch type things, it can track workouts. So it'll like know when you're doing. I think you have to say, I'm about to do this workout, and they have a partnership. If they didn't buy it with Fitstar, that workout app. So I think you have to say, I'm about to start this workout, and then it will know when you're doing different parts of that workout. So like if you're doing burpees, if you're doing push-ups, and whatever, jumping jacks, it'll measure those.
So it's not like it tells you now do jumping jacks. And
it'll tell you that.
So the band does that too.
Yeah. So
I haven't actually tested. I tested the band one. I haven't tested
two. But will
two
it know that you're doing those push-ups? Like it'll count reps for your push-ups.
The band one did.
Okay.
And it was like, you know, somewhat accurate. It wasn't 100%. It wasn't terrible. It got most of them. I haven't tried with the band too, so I should test that. I also want to mention Under Armour did come out with a new app too, UA Record, which is supposed to be like this big unified, and it's got all the social elements into it, but this big unified platform.
They have several different fitness trackers that they released.
It's funny because everybody's coming out with their own app and a different way of tracking, and I feel like I don't know if there's been an element of fitness tracking that's come out as the main lead. The thing I always hear people talk about are steps, but it's probably because that's the easiest thing to do, and you really don't have to work out much to do that. I mean, if you're just walking around, you're obviously increasing your steps.
You say that. I've had 1,600 steps in the day. That's horrendous.
But I guess my point is, you know, it sounds really cool that
every phone
reps.
Can count steps now. It's just like, it's commoditized.
Yeah, assuming you have your phone on you all the time, though.
Oh, I know. I'm not saying, but it's like if I'm not super enthusiast or think I'm setting some New Year's resolution, like counting steps is a commodity, right? I can either buy a $15 pedometer, which is actually going to be more accurate than all these devices, or I can just use my phone.
I think Xiaomi came out with a $35 fitness tracker, and it just does basic stuff, but it works. So I don't think you can buy it here, though. But my point is, you know, I hear about a lot of this functionality, and I don't know which one is. I mean, admittedly, I don't work out, so this is the worst. I'm probably the worst person to talk about this, but I'm not sure which of these functions has emerged. But it sounds really useful, like you said, if it can record all the reps for everything you're doing, and somehow it's if you tell it what it's doing and it kind of knows what you're doing. I mean,
so the crazy thing is that their stock price dropped significantly right after they announced this. There was a small Fitbit. Sorry.
Okay.
Thank you for the clarification. So Fitbit's stock price dropped significantly. They did a small rally, but I think overall it's still down from immediately before they announced this watch at CES. So I think, you know, people are like, they're looking at it and they're like, it's you don't want to compete with Android and Apple Watch. The other thing, I thought when I first saw the videos and stuff like that, I thought it looked decent. But then I saw like close up promo footage of it, and it looked meh. It like not crazy good, but not terrible. I know it has a square watch face, which you don't prefer, Sean.
I don't
kind of looks like an Apple Watch.
That's what it kind of looks like an Apple Watch. There's some gaps in it and stuff like that. And but they did say it's actually very large. Like it's larger than the 48. The 40. What is it? 42
mm. 42 and that's a smaller one.
No, it's 38. Oh, you're right. 42 or 44. 42. So they said it's bigger than the largest Apple Watch, I think. And it just comes in one size. So women who wear it, you know, it's just going to be this big chunky thing on their arm.
200. I think or 250.
Between 200 and 300. I don't know exactly what.
Yeah.
It's funny because Fitbits have never looked great, but they've looked minimalist enough that a lot of people will just wear them whatever, wherever they go. And also they've done a good job. Like a lot of people have third party, I guess, skins that you can put on them or the bands and things like I've that. And people customize them. I feel like getting a watch right is much harder than the Fitbit. Like people have just been okay with whatever they look like.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm not too hot on this device. I mean, it kind of
it's too big for me. Like,
yeah, it's for something that's
purely like you're getting this because you want the fitness elements of it. I just think it's too big. It looks a lot like the Apple Watch. I can't really tell how thick
it kind of also
is.
Looks like an older
up close. It doesn't look that much like the Apple Watch.
It looks more like a Casio. It looks really watch, thick. Like
I mean, it's more. It's somewhat derivative of that design, but when you get up close, it's far from it.
Yeah, and the Apple Watch is way more bulbous. You can see a lot more sharp corners on
But it also has that gap because Netflix. I think that
unit
actually comes out. It can pop out, I think. So, can
you put it into other form factors potentially?
Maybe a clip or something like that. I think that's their intention.
You put it under your face.
So, I mean, the app part of it is probably going to be decent. They do have a pretty good app. One of my gripes with it, though, is that they keep all their data. They don't really let it talk to other platforms. Like, there's one, like, I can't sync that data to the Apple HealthKit or anything
like
that.
That's unfortunate.
Because, not that I want, you know, I'm not a fanboy. I know you guys think I'm a fanboy, but it's not like I want Apple to have all my data. But that HealthKit lets me pass data from one app to another.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Right?
Because it pulls in stuff, and it's very granular, and I can buy like every single data item, like how much calcium I had. I can say, yes, this app can read it, or no, this app cannot. And so from that standpoint, it's really powerful to push data around to different apps, but Fitbit doesn't let any data go into that. The only workaround is that Fitbit has this kind of leftover, and we'll see how long it sticks, but they have this leftover partnership with MyFitnessPal, another app which actually Under Armour bought. So I don't know how long that'll last.
Yeah, that's kind of
interesting. You could take any weight that you track on their Fitbit scales and pull that into MyFitnessPal and then pull that into Apple HealthKit or other things and push it around. So
that's a lot of steps.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. So
the one trend, we kind of talked about this already, so we won't go into detail too much, but virtual reality, we kind of talked about this, like a lot of the big names are coming out this year. PlayStation has theirs. Oculus is obviously coming out.
And then the Vive.
The Vive is coming out. So, you know, there was a lot of hype around this again this year, and I think there was this one treadmill that was like the whole floor panel is just a big treadmill, and then you're strapped to this like big harness. Like, clearly it's not a consumer thing. It's, you know, for commercial.
Well, it depends on what consumer you are.
Yeah. This is a Rob Stelling product. Yeah.
Gonna have to buy a new house.
But I think it's Virtuix. It still has their treadmill that's supposedly launching this year as well. I think it's like $400 or $500, but it's this concave octagon that you have these special shoes that run up to size and stuff.
Shoes, yeah.
Which hopefully is the case, because then I can just do all my exercise in there. But I mean, we talked about this already, so I don't want to go into too much detail. But I just think that's also a trend worth mentioning at the show this year.
Yeah, I mean, they did have a presence, and a lot of people went. From some of the journalists that I listened to in podcasts and stuff like that, that's what they were excited to see, because they had not yet experienced VR,
right?
And that's something that you have to experience for yourself. Yeah, you can't just listen to other people. Like, I can watch videos of drones taking off and stuff like that, or see a promo video for some car tech. That's great, but definitely, yeah, VR, you got to see it for yourself. So I think that was a big draw for some of the journalists who went.
And I think this has been happening for a little while now, but even more than Oculus showing off the Rift or HTC showing off the Vive, you're seeing more and more games and other companies showing off products that use that technology. So it's like, you know, it's almost like if you see the Xbox One controller everywhere, it's something you start seeing it integrated into everything else. So you're seeing how developers want to use it. And one thing you had mentioned earlier, drones use VR, because there's all kinds of different things you can use VR for. And you're seeing more and more of that, not just, you know, them showing off their own device.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, the market share, you talk about developers, the market share, I've heard the number of PCs in the world that can, you know, use devices like the Oculus Rift and HTC Vive are numbering in about 10 million, which is significantly less than just the number of PS4s out there.
Sure.
Right? So
but PS4 that's another is, platform that'll have VR, though.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. So, but it's obviously less powerful than the PC version. So it's going to be interesting to see what types of alternate
experiences
start to crop up, because the most prevalent system that people could develop for is probably going to be the PS4, just based on the cost of entry.
And one quick thing we should mention, I don't want to turn this into a VR show, but the system requirements are also based on, I assume, focusing a little more on hyper-realistic graphics. A lot of people were talking that, I forgot, was it Rez? I forgot what game it was, but it was a really low graphics game. It was more polygonal, but it felt more immersive than a lot of other games. So there are some ways you, and actually I think this was a PlayStation VR game. There are ways you can work around because obviously, you know, the system requirements are just based on what we assume games are going to be at that level. Definitely for realistic looking games, mm-hmm. you're right. This is going to be out of the reach for a lot of people, but I'm interested to see if developers can find ways to make games that work on lower end systems like mine. I mean, I only have a GeForce 670, which is pretty low end at this point. But I don't know.
Like, this is what I'm excited about, are these experiences, right? So seeing, mm-hmm. you know, what are the new types of ways we can play, you know, quote, games using VR, and what other experiences and emotions can you elicit using this this technology?
Sadness.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting. So I'm excited anyway for this year just to see the experimentation that's going to go on with VR stuff now that we'll actually have it in the mainstream. So anyway, that's going to do it for this week's episode of The Unwind. Thank you so much for listening. You can subscribe to us on the iTunes and Stitcher. You can also find us on YouTube by searching for The Commentist. We're only three away.
Three away. Come on, people.
Three subscribers
you can
away
do it.
You can be that one.
Oh, yeah. Wait, have I subscribed? I guess we could be those three people.
Please share us with your friends. Leave us some comments. You can submit questions and topics to us directly by going to theunwind.audio. Also, be sure to check out The Commentist, where you can find many of our other great podcasts, including Roll to Hit, a Dungeons & Dragons podcast that all of us are on, a new Roll to Hit adventure show that will be launching in the next week or so in audio, so that'll be exciting, and also a new show that we've been hyping for a while called Prayer Hands Emoji, about music and politics and stuff, that'll actually be launching. So that's excited, and Bearded Vegans, of course, so there's a lot of good stuff, so be sure to check us out.
What do you think the next car company that'll be named after a scientist?
Tesla, Faraday, Edison?
We could do
Edison car.
Bohr's
Einstein?
Boring
Bohr?
Cars.
Yeah, Bohr.
And then
Bohr
cars. Some what are some other
Bruce Banner. Bruce Banner, Tony Stark.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Reed Richards.
I'm a hype machine.